Hello, listeners. Welcome to Human Music. I'm your host, Mira Jo. I'm a musician, and each show I invite a guest musician to pick a song we can listen to together and share. My guest today is Solvay Amelia Noah, aka Reverend Amelia Bolliard, identifies as a free being. Her ministry is Ololo, Our Love of Life Opera, a non-denominational practice prioritizing authenticity, acceptance, and surrender. She relays reparative vibrations and sonic inspiration as she delivers sacred and ancestral tones and tunes. The resulting sounds are called medicine songs. Amelia, thank you for joining us and welcome to Human Music.
Oh, thank you so much, Mira. I'm really delighted to be on a show that's called Human Music. And I will share this bit of poetic identifying of who I am in this moment here with you at Human Music on this show and what's to come. Love seed sower, self-owned, following the moon, purveying timeless, channeled soul family sing-alongs, utilizing vocal looping and layering rhythm and rhyme as remedy, both stumbling and bounding steadily into ever deeper surrender to the mystery of creation.
That was beautiful. And thank you for creating the vibe and the mood with that. Beautiful. Tell us a little bit about where you come from in terms of your early experiences playing music or listening to music or an early memory about learning to play music.
This is a fun question. I was raised among musicians and artists of all varieties. And my mom was really into dancing and had great taste in music. I think she taught me my first dance move when I was two or three, a cool kind of rocking back and forth move called the cherry. And we were just listening to all kinds of funk and soul in the 70s. And my interest in dancing would become a lifelong following and or calling for me. So my mom and I would dance and she would play music. And the time that stands out for me is when she says that she found a crate of records, of albums, vinyl records. And as she was fingering through them, one of the covers stood out to her and it was an artist she hadn't heard of before or didn't know very well, I think. She pulled it out and it was Sergio Mendes' Brazil 88. And so she put that on our record player and we both fell in love and couldn't be stopped dancing and learning all of the lyrics. And most importantly, my favorite song of all time to this day, Waters of March, which was originally written by Antonio Carlos Jobim, but as recreated by Sergio Mendes, just changed my life and revealed to me through those that poem that comes through in that song and the sounds and the feel and the groove and the vibe. It revealed a part of me to myself. And I would become a person who was interested in world music from there, which was pretty cool. I kind of am realizing that now, that my first love was music based in exploring world music and artists from other countries and such. Then I was in the Seattle Girls Choir for a spell. I didn't think I was very good. I was very uncomfortable singing, but I loved it. I loved singing. And I loved singing with other people, with other voices. It did exactly what it's supposed to do. It grounded me. It created a sense of connection for me. It felt healing to me. All the breathing, you know, the relaxation of it. And I couldn't quite avail myself of that until much later in my life. But I always sang. My mom and I always sang. We always danced. We always sang. And somewhere in my late teens, I started writing songs, lyrics. And then I got a bass. When I was around 19 years old, I got an electric bass. It was the sound I always was drawn to in the music that I listened to. It was a cheap old electric bass. It had been owned by two other female musicians who had been in cool punk bands, so it had a story to it. It's not a great bass, but it is because of where it's been and the life that it's had. And I bought that bass and an amp for $175 back in 1995 or something, and just started plucking out the sounds I heard in all my favorite songs. And then I could put my lyrics to my own bass lines, which I started writing. And from there, the writing became more and more prolific, but the singing was not accessible. The singing would come much later for me. I still had a really difficult relationship with my voice, which is part of what came out in that little blurb I shared as we started here, that there's repair. You shared also as part of my bio. There's repair, and it's a family sing-along. And my idea about a family sing-along is that all voices are welcome. There's all ages of people, all skills, all talent levels, and everybody gets to sing. So that's where I am now with it, and that's what actually delivered me to being able to do what I do today is when I sing, I feel like all my ancestors are welcome to come through. The babies and the elders are all welcome to come through and let their voices be heard. And that means I say yes to every voice that comes through. This has been a really healing experience for me in music. And that was a little jump ahead. I'll pop in that I did go to Cornish College of the Arts as a vocal jazz major and was very much still in angst and resistance to my voice. I knew when I started there that I would probably get some really great skills from there and then apply them in an unexpected way. And that did happen. I learned ear training. I learned some piano chords. You know, you had to be able to play piano chords. I learned some theory. It was natural for me. I like theory. I like logic and math, and those are all kind of the same thing. But I didn't like my voice. And I sang, and it was painful. It was really painful to not enjoy the thing that was actually ultimately going to become the most healing practice in my life. So that was a period that was necessary. I only now have returned to a really deep interest in singing jazz, and we'll see where that's leading. But this is my kind of popcorn style of to answer the question that you asked of where music came in. And then I want to play any instrument I can get my hands on now. And I don't want to be a master of any instrument except for maybe the piano. That's a long-term goal. I just want to feel every possibility of allowing what the inspiration that comes through me to be expressed as sound or tone or rhythm, because it shows me something about myself, and it's a way to connect with my community and my family and on this earth.
I identify with that a lot. I also wrote songs in my teens, never had any vocal training, never played these songs. Nobody knew that I was writing and singing those songs. They were a complete secret. And one of the things I've also had a really difficult time with my voice, hearing my voice recorded, you know, it's one experience to sing and then it's another experience to hear yourself singing. So I also really have struggled with that and only most recently feel more comfortable with it. What was it that made you uncomfortable?
Well, looking at it from my perspective now, probably the restriction around it, probably the idea that it was standardized in any way and it was subject to official judgment. I was actually being graded on how my voice came out. And that is just so counter to the purpose of what my voice is ultimately being used for. Also, I came from on my dad's side of the family. My dad is African lineage, just found out Nigerian. Very exciting to know this. My dad married a woman who's both, I think they could all sing. And one of her two daughters was a really committed and inspired gospel singer. So I'm pretty sure what happened is I thought I was supposed to sound like my stepsister, and I didn't. I sound like my ancestors, which is making me very emotional because this is a really beautiful gift that has ultimately revealed its value and its potency in my life. Yeah, I didn't sound like a gospel singer. I don't have that kind of voice. And so I couldn't allow myself to be heard if I was in any way falling short of this some standard, arbitrary standard that I had applied to myself that was never actually going to be appropriate for me. And she's a fantastic singer. And I listened to so much great music, and those singers were all so extraordinary, and they're, you know, just these natural songbirds. And I didn't hear that in my own voice, so I just thought that meant that it wasn't for me.
Yeah, there's the creator, and then there's the listener. And so it's sort of this soul searching, like, who am I making music for, right? Am I making music for myself? Or am I making music for an imaginary audience? I spent a lot of my time making music for an imaginary audience where nothing is ever good enough. And it is this feeling of, how do I measure up against compared to other people? It's so great to hear that your journey has brought you to a place where you feel so authentically connected to the audience being yourself. But in terms of not just for yourself, but connecting to yourself connects you to an audience that is not imaginary, but it's grounded or rooted in some place that's maybe not of this world. In terms of, you walk on the street, you see people, you go to a show, you listen to music, you know, that's sort of the day-to-day world that we live in. It is beautiful to hear you talk about this world that you tap into when you create sound that connects to this world but is not of this world. Mm. I don't know if that resonates with
you. Absolutely. It's always wild to have someone reflect back to me this truth and this reality that I experience. That is what it is. Yeah, that's such a beautiful way to envision it, what you just said, that by connecting to myself, I then connect to the world and my family on earth and beyond. To me, it makes sense. I don't have to buy a ticket. I don't have to stand in line. Nobody gives me permission. I can love who I want to love. I can love everyone. And that's actually what this is all about. It's reparative because it is love-centered. The prerequisite to it being love-centered is that I love myself. And when I love myself, I am capable of loving others. So this is a love-based practice. And I think that's where so much of the repair and healing comes from for me, is I, of course, benefit from allowing the love that I experience in myself, that I've finally been able to cultivate in my being, to ripple out and touch all of the people in the world, especially those who don't necessarily feel loved. Those are the people I think about the most.
Yeah, it's hard. I think it's also scary to communicate something that comes from within. I mean, every person has their unique story or their unique view or presence that they bring that nobody else will ever repeat, right? And so when I feel like I'm delving deep into that very personal place, it's scary to share that with other people because, A, it's so closely connected to who I am. And also, I can't judge it in terms of, well, how does that compare to what somebody else is doing? There's no direct comparison. So it's like, where is it that, you know, I default to this old way of thinking, like, is it good or is it bad, right? Mm-hmm. And to me, like, that good or bad, I like that or I don't like that, which, you know, I think is, we all get to make those decisions. Oh, I like that sound. I like that music. I like that musician, or I don't like them, you know? So there's this default mode. And when you can't really, it's almost like when I can't judge it, it's scary for me to put it out there because I want to protect that creation that I've made. And so how do you protect it if you place it, you know? So I think it takes a lot of courage to explore that inner voice and bring that to outside of yourself and let other people in to listen to, because I think that's where the real connection is, mm-hmm. is like to have the courage as a musician to express yourself, trusting that there's a listener who will connect to that rather than trying to envision like what a listener may or may not like.
Yes, absolutely. I want to say that I was given pretty clear instructions, for lack of a better term. I relate to something that is inspiration that I also call the wisdom, and some people call it creator or creation. And when I was connecting with that, what I was guided to do was, well, here's what the directions were. I was doing this live on a streaming platform, and I was told that I was shown that I was not to edit, delete, get rid of anything. Whatever came out stayed, and that I would grow the resilience to live with the fact that a mistake that I made existed in the world and everyone could repeat it over and over and over, but I was going to be okay because the love in myself was intact. And so the protecting of the music came from staying with the point, which was to allow imperfection through me to exist and be an example and a permission for other people to also be human, perfectly imperfect, and that is sanctified and a gift to one another. So that is where my safety comes, is that I'm doing what I have been shown and inspired to do by letting it be what it is, and it being okay that if only one person, there were times that no one heard what I put out, as far as I know. And I still healed because the authentic expression had taken place, and it had run through my body, and my body had received the benefit.
And what I hear you saying is there's another level of embracement, which is, this is about my journey as the creator. Mm. And so it takes it to that next level of, not only is it being created to tap into yourself, it's also you're the one who's having the experience. And that's the most, it's prioritizing your own experience of the creation, which is, I think, all we really want to do on this planet, right, is to just express what's within us. If you're just joining us, I've been talking with my guest, Amelia. You're listening to Human Music on KVSH LP Vashon, and we'll take a quick break for our underwriters.
This portion of VOV programming comes to you with support from Vashon Center for the Arts. VCA provides quality arts experiences for all ages and creates opportunities for artists to perform and exhibit their work. Find out what's happening at VashonCenterForTheArts.org.
Welcome back to Human Music on KVSH LP Vashon. My guest today is musician Solvay Amelia Noah. We have been talking a little bit about her experiences as a musician, and now I've invited her to share a song with us for us to listen to together. Can you tell us a little bit about the song you selected and why?
Yeah, sure. Oh, I have goosebumps all over my body. I just found this artist, Hiromi, who is an astonishing musician, in my opinion. I don't know where I was when I heard it. I have a pretty awesome algorithm on my listening device, so I think it might have been a suggestion. And when I heard it, I remember moment after moment feeling like, oh my gosh, who is this? This is my thing. What's happening here? And my body was kind of taken over and I was thrown into dance. And so I went to check out who this person is. And I don't do research so much on people. I just feel what comes. And I thought, wow, this woman has put in so much time, and she's so gifted. I had this sense of deep respect for how she got to the point of being able to create such a creation as the one we're about to listen to. Are you wanting me to say the name of the song? And
sure, go
ahead. Yeah. So this song is called Yes, Ramen! And it's a great example of what I like to experience when I listen to music. I like to be drawn in and follow sort of a complex narrative. I love changes. I love counterpoint. I love when people play with time signatures and feels, and it just doesn't get any better than that for me, because it's like a life within a life, within a song. So I have listened to this song a lot, and I'll probably be bouncing a little bit around while we listen. I'll try not to hit the microphone.
Thank you.
That was Hiromi Sonic Wonder Yes Ramen. Wow.
Woo.
What fun. That was a party in the ears and in the bones.
Yeah.
You know, I'm just struck by the story of the song. It takes you to so many different places. I read that it was inspired by ramen artisans. Mm. And it really plays on a lot of these pop culture, but also traditional themes. Initially, there are some parts that feel very like cocktail and loungy, and there are parts that bring in more of this kind of traditional song influence, maybe Japanese traditional song influence, but then also this kind of stereotypical racist kind of depiction of what Asian music sounds like. So there's this kind of comment on that. And so I can't help but think there's contradictions or comparisons between sort of the ramen from the artisan point of view versus the ramen we see on the shelf versus, you know, pop culture embracing ramen and all of the complexity in that, and which makes it really fun to listen to, but also like very kind of deep.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. An empowered irreverence at times,
yes.
Which
absolutely.
Is just fantastic. She went there. She took all of the permission that she has, the understanding she has, the connection, the inspiration. I mean, this is what potentially we can do with music or with any art, is tell a story, comment on what is going on in the world around us, the history, our lineage, our ancestry. This is why I'm so attracted to this artist. I feel her. She's so alive. She expresses her life in her music. And it feels very honest and owning. I watched her Tiny Desk. I can recommend it. It was so fun to watch this woman, her life energy, fill the room. And then watch these incredible musicians who she plays with. Look at her while she's playing and how she is infusing them with this inspiration is always the word for it. And her passion. And she's beautiful and she's smiling. You know, whenever I'm looking at an art, artists go through all kinds of emotional experiences and I like to witness the full spectrum of them. This woman is just smiling and beaming and then dropping in, giving a piece of herself. Mm-hmm. That's how I feel it. So she, and it's so effective because she's referencing these pop sounds. She's got that little ska element. You know, she got me with the bass solo. She made space for a bass solo. So I thought, well, we have a similar, you know, appreciation there. And then the gifted artists who have just chosen to work with her really speaks to her and the integrity of her work. I just feel like she's a very sound representative of what music is meant to be, which is free.
Yeah, I saw the KEXP recording and she had the piano and then two keyboard synthesizers, a trumpet player who was also using effects on the trumpet, the bass and the drummer. And I agree, there did seem to be this vibe of like complete commitment to the music. I mean, you kind of have to be when it's that virtuosic. What's the word? Virtuosic.
Virtuosinicity. Virtual radness. Yeah.
It is really the way that she does command mm-hmm. the, not just the piano, but the sounds. And she is there is a fearlessness, mm-hmm. I think, about the music to go to all these different places. And I like also that the bass, really, I feel like that's bass sound, because you think of jazz, typically acoustic upright bass, and there is that feeling of like, well, that's authentic jazz music. And when I was watching the bassist on the video and hearing it, because I immediately was drawn to the bass too when I first heard it, it's like, this person is completely embracing the electric bass sound, at which I was like, that it sounds so cool. And she also is embracing just the sounds of the synthesizer and the trumpet player with the effects on the trumpet. And so it really kind of breaks these traditional ideas that we have about what jazz music is.
And even the structure of a band, bass, trumpet, drums, and keys. A beautiful baby grand, I think, was what I saw her play. And then a couple of synthesizers. The profile, or the sort of the palette of sounds there, is just, she has found, she's dialed in to something and she's taken it to its best place. And you said something about her, just her, the fact that she is commanding and steering her ship, you know, and this is a time of all kinds of human beings doing all kinds of wonderful things. And it's, we've just come so far from when I was a kid, when women in music meant something a little different than it does right now, and could only be something a little different than it is right now. And it's, that's what I was thinking about her, is what was it like for her as a little girl, as a little kid, to listen to artists. I heard a little Pat Metheny in her, and I love Pat Metheny. I was just imagining her sitting around, you know, playing her, practicing on her piano, being inspired, and then feeling unlimited, and then giving us something that feels boundless.
I'm going to bring in the VCA show that I was at last night, where the Evren Ozel did classical piano pieces. And one of them was Bela Bartok. And he was talking about, you know, how he was one of the early founders of ethnomusicology and brought a lot of the traditional sound into classical music, or his pieces. And so I was thinking about, like, that balance of needing to preserve traditions, but also breaking the mold. And we don't want to lose those traditions, but we also want to take our own spin on things and push the limits of them. So it kind of, and there's a exhibit right now, the Balkan music exhibit at the Fashion Center for the Arts, and to see, there's a lot of photographs of the 1967 Balkan Music Festival, and just the clothing and the music, just the musicians. It was very sad to me to think about all of the demolition, the destruction that has happened in that area, and just feeling a loss for the traditions and the importance of keeping those traditions alive. Just keeping those two things in the balance, where we come from, where we're going, where we are now. And that's sort of what you were talking about at the top of the show a little bit about where you're tapping in. So just to bring it full circle. You've been listening to Human Music on KVSH LP Vashon.
Voice of Vashon thanks Windermere Real Estate for its support, making our community information programming and our emergency alert service possible. Find them on the web at windermerevashon.com.
Welcome back to Human Music on KVSH LP Vashon. My name is Mira Jo. I am your host, and my guest today is Solvay Amelia Noah, and I've invited her to perform live in studio for us. Thank you.
Yeah. Forbidden, the allowed, the solitude, the crowd, the light, the dark, the death, the spark, the sea, the sound of the sea in me. The free, the thought, the sought, the seen, the human being.
Human being.
a human being.
That was Solvay Amelia Noah performing live in the studio here. Thank you so much, Amelia. That was really beautiful. Can you tell us a little bit about the music that you were creating, the sounds that you were creating? Because the listener had missed out a little bit on the physicality of your creation, the technology and the instruments you were using, and it was just part of the overall experience of being here. So I'm just trying to recreate it a little bit for our listeners.
I appreciate the question. It initially starts with my surrendering to the wisdom, the inspiration, as I've mentioned. And as a dancer my whole life, I think the physicality that you're talking about, I believe is movement that has always existed in my body, that's been my primary. It was my initial way of expressing creativity in my life. So the energy that would typically go into kicking my leg or jumping, I believe that at its root as inspiration is now coming out in these movements of my arms. I'm also, I feel that I'm being moved in a way that is the way a trumpet, the way the air moves through a trumpet to create the tone. When my arms move and when sometimes my feet come up, it's as if I'm being breathed into and also being played like an instrument myself. So that is the physicality. The tones and the sounds have developed over time and have taken different meaning for me. To put it simply, I think of them as a multitude of ancestors all singing their sound. Now this is, it's more than that, and it's simpler than that. But when I'm surrendering to it, I'm saying yes to whoever wants to sing, and it ultimately amounts to a concoction or a stew of all the flavors, aromas, ingredients that create just the right medicine. Food as medicine, music as medicine for me, and then it tends to, there are usually at least a couple people who also get something out of the tones and even the movement. And I've been told by a person who was of the Nigerian Yoruba religious practice that she recognized the sounds. And that's a new piece of information for me, but she recognized them as being related to Nigerian spiritual practices, which I don't have a relationship with really at all, besides through myself, my bloodline.
Yeah, there was a sense of that you were embodying different characters through your vocalization too, where the different melodic sounds, they weren't all one sound. There weren't all one voice. And so I got that sense too, that you were embodying these different beings. And I too felt like it was very connected to something older and deeper, because I was actually thinking about Korean traditional music called pansori. And it's, I would say, a folk tradition that is somewhat similar to a kind of opera, but there's some simple string and percussive instruments, but there's a talking and also some guttural vocalization. So there's a lot of vocalization and guttural and also melodic. So it kind of combines those things. And so it is sort of like each vocalization is a different character, and it sort of tells a story. So I was very swept up with the story of that creation. So that was all improvised.
Yes, yeah.
And it did, I felt like there was some initial influence, just the song that we just heard and maybe our conversation kind of informing what you were doing. So it was really cool to hear how those things kind of fed into what you were doing.
Absolutely. It's absolutely informed by the people in the room and what has flowed before and where we're all going. That's my favorite part, actually. And, you know, I do think there's a connection. I think ancient music is telling probably the same story or a similar story in a different way, Korean or Nigerian, perhaps, in this case. Yeah.
And I'm curious about your views on, because I know you were saying you came from a little bit more of a traditional jazz instructional framework, and you know, I'm thinking of like scatting or riffing, and did that help you hone your skills?
It paid off in the end. I was very opposed to improv and scatting when I was training as a jazz musician. That was one of the most awkward aspects of singing at the time. It has not been until I got to this expression, my authentic expression aligned with my right voice, that I have found scatting coming through and hearing. I'm very influenced by Ella Fitzgerald, and I know it shows up, and it's part of but she's part of my spiritual practice. Her impact on me, music is part of my spirituality. So for me, it is consistent with the experience being sacred in this case, that Ella Fitzgerald's scatting, you know, impression shows up because she helped me find myself through her musical expressions and her authentic, you know, awesomeness.
I think a theme on this show, Human Music, is the idea that music is beyond genre or category. And I think what you did today was also sort of beyond music. It kind of was music, but also spoken word and like bordering and into the realm of art. What is art? Your music pushed me in the direction of art today. So thank you so much for that. Mm-hmm. My guest today has been Solvay Amelia Noah. Thank you so much for joining us on Human Music.
It's been my absolute pleasure. Thank you so much.